estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 473. I'm Adam and Circus Riffraff, you don't own this planet, you know. And here's Debbie Melrose.
Lead on, deadbeat.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Excuse me, but you are the Captain Kirk Cook, the famous intergalactic explorer. I've got maps at home showing all your journeys and a piece of one of your old shoes I bought in a souvenir shop.
Did you say Captain Kirk Cook?
He did.
I think he did say that, didn't he?
He blew it.
Robert Haynes.
Is there no end to you weirdos?
Nope. Very, very appropriate. And Mary Lang.
One small step for man, one giant leap for, or words to that effect.
Exactly. I had a few other. There was one I was going to do, the easy one, of course, tickets, please. But I thought I did that last time, so I thought it would be a bit boring to do the same one again.
But that was years and years and years and years ago.
And the other one was God's of Ragnarok, which was extremely
irritating.
And there was a couple of other ones which will come to my mind as and when we do the, you know. And if anybody sees a message coming through from Kirsty, please let me know if she doesn't indeed join in the feed as we go. Right then. So let's get on, because we've got quite a lot indeed, of stuff to do on this show, including announcing the winner of the Fantasy Cosplay competition.
Oh, darn, I forgot to enter.
Yeah, thanks for that, Kirby. I love your support.
I was going to.
Oh, that's an interesting bit of music, isn't it? Pardon?
What was that?
It was the opening rubbishy title sequence for Doctor Who.
I don't know what that was.
We all know that.
Now, of course, I had to say straight away, and before, obviously, we're going to talk about what we think about this episode later on, is it's called The Greatest Show in the Galaxy, which is the most ironic name in the history of Doctor Who. Anyway, moving on. Right, so we start with a rather spooky circus. Very small ring. And we know why it's a small ring, because it was done in a car park. There wasn't much room. And this ringmaster, there's a camera angle, which was very, very unflattering, showing that he really did need to do an advert for Clearasil. Fortunately for him, they didn't do this angle again for the rest of the story. But yeah, he did have a bit of a skin issue, shall we say, that we all had around that time in the 80s. Well, me personally, anyway. But he was older than me. Yeah, so he's doing this rap, and he doesn't sound particularly comfortable doing his rap. And it's his little glance straight into the camera, which you notice his zits quite a lot. Bless him. The next scene is in the TARDIS, and I will tell you, Kirby, so don't get across. So as you know in advance, this is the last story we see this version of the TARDIS interior console.
So why do you have me on if I can't give you this?
You don't have to give me, because I already know. Of course, the Doctor's...
Because I already knew it, too.
The Doctor's doing learning juggling, which is rather ironic, because he can already juggle.
So he's a doctor. No,
we
couldn't.
Be calling Kirby WizKid.
Yes.
He couldn't actually juggle that.
I had that book, by the way.
Why am I not surprised?
I still can't juggle.
Okay, Terry Miles says, good evening, everybody. And Lydia Miles says, good afternoon. Right, yeah, so the Doctor's learning juggling via a book hanging from the ceiling. And Ace is poking through the... Basically, she's dragged the whole of the contents of the wardrobe towards the door of the TARDIS console room. So this is what teenagers call a floor-drobe. So it's quite appropriate in some ways. And she was actually wearing one of the Fourth Doctor's scarves, which you can buy from Lavazzi. Not that particular one, because this has got little patches on it.
That's a good plug.
Yeah, that's the patched one.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I know that, Kirby, because...
You just said it. Why then? What's the point of my...
Oh, don't start sulking. We've only got 2 minutes into it. And then we meet...
Oh, wait. What about Matthew? Matthew said he was going to join us.
Oh, he didn't say anything to me.
He knows that.
And also...
Be able to.
And also, he's another person who can join because he's actually added to the call automatically.
Reese?
No, he won't be coming. He never comes. He always has some sort of excuse. Did you not know that? Anyway, so Nord turns up, and the fact that he opens up the side of his bike and he's got some sort of rank looking burger that actually looks like it's got sweets in it.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Like red licorice or something.
Yeah. Anyway, the Doctor is right up in the ceiling of the console room. I've never seen the Doctor in the ceiling of the TARDIS console room before. He's poking around. There's another shot
of... He lost his ball up there, remember?
It's what? Oh, the ball. That's right, yeah. And then Ace comes out wearing Bonnie Langford's jacket for a few seconds before she realises it's far too small for anybody apart from Bonnie Langford and perhaps Alicia, who's some tiny person. I've seen co-founder of the show. Yeah, I've seen Bonnie Langford in the flesh, and Alicia is smaller than Bonnie Langford. I can tell you that.
Wow.
Yeah. Tim Drury. Oh, Tim Drury wants his plug. Hang on. I'm all ready for this one this week, Tim.
You were?
Yes, Tim Drury says, keep an eye out for cool as a cucumber sylph walking. Oh, that's the best part of the story. That's sort of totally disastrous. I've just closed down my priority jingle folder and have to get it back open again. There's also touchy feeliness going on between the Doctor and Doctor and Ace. I've lost my folder. I'll carry on. I'll go back to my jingle folder in a minute. Then this random sort of little robot-y thing, junk mail robot, and reverse films his little protuberance onto the TARDIS console, and they get a little video promo, in fact, of the planet and the circus and everything. Mm. And Ace sort of indicates she finds clowns a bit creepy, which is a bit of a shame because most circuses have clowns. Then we cut to a scene of Bellboy running with some quite pretty
flower child.
Very pretty
master.
No, it wasn't the master. I just said it's Bellboy.
Christopher Guard.
What about Christopher Guard?
He voiced Frodo in the Ralph Bakshi version of Lord of the Rings.
That was the animated one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wow. Thank you, Kirby. This scene is leading up to the very pretty flower child getting done in. Then we meet the clown played by that bloke who used to be in EastEnders, who's the actor's name.
Ian Reddington.
Yeah, Eddington, yes.
Reddington.
Anyway, he's very good in this, to be fair.
Wonderful in this.
And
And we need to all make that little hand gesture.
Yeah, I love that.
I've been practicing that.
Have you?
Yes, I love that, yeah.
Brilliant. Does it twice in the story. I love it. So the Doctor and Ace turn up during all these shenanigans, and then Nord speeds up to this sort of lady played by Peggy Mount, who is, I don't know what she's really doing there. She's moaning a lot and sort of offering some rank food to people, basically. Moaning about people coming to her planet. And yet, if they're not there, she's obviously earns a bit of money from tourists and stuff. So I don't know what she's moaning about, to be fair.
That complains about them.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you do, is complain about your customers.
Okay. Well, you may do. I don't. I love my customers. So the Doctor and Ace have a disgusting meal. Eventually, Flower Child gets done in, and Nord again? Turns up. He's very tough in a comedic sort of Grange Hill sort of way. and he has a bit of.
He reminds me of the skinheads from last week.
Yeah, a little bit like that's true. So he's on his way.
And Fred was very amused by his helmet.
Oh, yeah. That's what she said. Yes.
Well, I have to come up with something because you keep stealing all my.
I don't steal them. I just know them.
The bus is the same bus It's the same bus that got blown up by the Bannerman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Didn't know that. Well done.
I did. And guess what?
Thank you.
Can I say something more about it?
No.
It actually got abandoned there because they couldn't remove it.
Well, you can't really... Unfortunately, Robert, that your attempts to tell me a bit more about it got drowned out by Kirby trying to tell me a bit more about it. So, epic fail on both of your accounts then as we move on.
You're sounding like Ark right now.
Okay, you can say...
Anyway, did I not say before the episode started, we need to get through this story?
The bus, yes.
Yeah, the bus got abandoned there in the quarry because they couldn't move it.
Oh, so it's still there.
And they allowed them to leave it there. So it may be there still this day.
A rusty heap. If anybody had any sense, they'd sort of just keep it in a good sort of, because obviously Doctor Who fans do quarry tours, don't they, Kirby? And then they could here's the bus. Right then, so anyway, Nord heads off.
Well, I wonder if they left it there, I wonder if we'll see it again in Survival, just off in the background. This is the same quarry.
It just can't happen, can it? We're going to have to cut it. If we can't get through this story by the allotted time, we're just going to have to end it before talking about what we think about it, etc., etc. Well, that's fairly obvious. Anyway, Anity Butcher says, it's amazing they put the same bus back together again after it was blown up.
It's astounding.
Yes. Anyway, so the Doctor and Ace sort of mooch their way towards the Psychic Circus. And we sort of briefly meet Captain Cook. Was that Captain Kirk, Kirby?
Yes.
Captain Kirk, Cook, and Mags. Mags appears to be a bit unwilling... not companion, I suppose it's companion to a certain extent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like their doctor and companion,
except
isn't it?
She seems to not really like him.
Yeah, and doesn't really like being there.
Who would? I mean, who really would like Captain?
Precisely, yeah.
He's got lots of stories to tell. Anyway, the
doctor... Now, last time we discussed this, you said that that was the way she normally wore her hair, anyway.
Who?
Matt. Yeah.
Well, it was an 80s comb back sort of hairdo. You'd have to ask her whether it's where her hair really was.
You know what she looks like? She looks Mary.
She looks like Mary. My God. Mary.
No.
Excuse me.
EastEnders. EastEnders.
Oh, that's right. Mary in EastEnders from the very early days. Yes, very true.
Early version of her.
Very true. But I think Mary in EastEnders like a bit more. There wasn't as much colour in her facial makeup. Anyway, the Doctor and Ace have a conversation.
Her makeup had to be changed because they made her much more wolf-like in her makeup and all that. But then when they looked at the rushes or whatever, they thought that she looked a little too scary early on. They wanted to save scariness, so they toned her makeup and hair down a lot.
That would make sense, Mary. Anyway, they get caught by a robot. I love the way that Mags is struggling with the robot arm and it's getting bashed by Ace and stuff while the captain just sits there drinking tea. Superb. Mm-hmm. And then Adrian Mole turns up. Sorry, no. Whiskid turns
Mole.
Up.
It is Adrian Mole.
What?
It is Adrian Mole.
Yes, it is.
How dare you overshadow my excellent comment. Anyway, yes. John Tomarco, who played Adrian Mole.
Know that is because you said it last time. I still haven't bothered.
Yeah, right. Jan Tomarco played Adrian Moore for two series, and the claim to fame of that particular series is obviously that there's lots of people that were in it are now really big stars and actors. Mm. And his mum was played in the series
I like
one.
Adrian Moore.
His mum was played in series one by Julie Waters. And there you go. Julie Waters is quite a well-known actress. Kirby, by the way.
Yes, she was in Shirley Valentine.
She was in
Educating Rita.
Every Harry Potter film. Virtually every film that requires British actors, in fact.
And she was brilliant with Victoria Wood. Honestly, that's where I loved her most, is when she worked with Victoria Wood.
And she still did Victoria Wood when she was a big, big international star.
Absolutely.
But she got me thinking about, I was watching, was that thing on Sky One, Debbie, with Alan Carr, Michael Sheen and... is that woman in her daughter? French Sean Saunders. It's a Saunders woman.
I've no idea. I don't have Sky One.
Oh, it's a shame. It's really good. So it's a moody quiz.
Why don't you have Sky One, whatever that is?
It's a TV channel. Anyway,
Sky.
It's a movie quiz anyway. And Michael Sheen was pointing out that he was really gutted that he never got a chance to appear in any of the Harry Potter films, even the current ones. And they were taking the mickey out of him because... Alan Carr said, every single British actor has appeared in them apart from Michael Sheen. but there's Jennifer Saunders sitting on the other team. I'm pretty sure she wasn't in it either, funny enough. So there you go. Right, so Alan T. Butcher said Mary in EastEnders wasn't a werewolf. And then Adrian Mole was a friend of the retired General Grugger from Megloth. Well, there you go. That's right, because you have to watch Adrian Mole Series 1. It's called Adrian Mole, Age 13 and 3 quarters. The book is better.
Very good.
But watch the first series. It's very, very well done. I haven't watched it for years.
I love the books too.
But it's only available on video, I believe. Anyway, they go in the bus and...
DVD? No, it's on DVD now.
Is it? I'll have to get it.
Yes.
No, I'd rather stream it. Get BritBox to put it on so I can stream it. I really love that series. And, yes, and they go on the coach, the bus thing, and the ticket thing gets sort of blown up. Slightly.
First time.
Conductor. He's a conductor.
All right, conductor.
And he was the android in Time Lash.
Now, if he got electrocuted and he was a conductor, that would be quite a useful thing, wouldn't it?
No, the actor inside, yes, was the
Dean Hollingsworth.
Time Lash, but that's not his voice.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, right. And Neil James says, Think Beryl Reed was in it. No, she wasn't. But she'll always be best known for her BAFTA-worthy turn in Earthshock. Was Beryl Reed in it then?
BAFTA award-winning.
Yeah, a bit of sarcasm there, but hey. If she was in it, she wasn't. I think he's confusing her with Peggy Mount. Similar ilk of actress. So anyway, moving back to Doctor Who, and they gradually make their way, each of them, to the psychic circus. The funny thing is, when Jansen Marco, i.e. WizKid, is riding his BMX bike, he really doesn't seem to know how to ride it. He's struggling. He's wobbling all over the place.
He's a bit big for it, isn't he?
And the other funny thing about it is he does play the... Because obviously he's based on the Anoraki Doctor Who fan, isn't he? But he does actually play it as if he's Adrian Mole as well. So there's a mixture of it. There's also a bit of Harry Potter in there before Harry Potter came into existence.
I wonder if the look was an inspiration for Harry Potter.
How do you know that?
I'm wondering if so.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear the I'm wondering part of that statement. Sorry.
Don't think so, Kirby.
Yeah, there's a lot of kids out there that look like that.
A Doctor Who fan would always hope so. Anyway, they eventually get into the psychic thing, and there's an instance in which something makes Mag scream slightly more menacingly, funny enough, than Bonnie Langford's high-pitched squeal. It was very,
yeah, her
very
scream was fantastic.
Heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching scream.
Yeah, really, really panicked, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so that's how it ends, episode one.
The something was she saw someone get killed.
No, she probably saw one of the episodes of the 20 megabyte podcast that you appeared in, Kirby, and thought, oh god, no. Well, are we ever going to get through this story? Am I going to survive any potential interviews on this show?
Interviews? Why would we have an interview?
I beg your pardon?
Adam? I did read that Jessica Martin does a dead-on impression of Bonnie Langford.
Jessica Martin does dead-on impressions of lots of people. But so we'll come to that later in the show.
That it could be that that's part of her take on of Bonnie Langford.
Yeah, you're probably right. Anyway, so the episode one ends with the Doctor asking, Ace if she wants to go into the circus. And they do, and... there's the lady, the crystal ball lady, she's sort of a bit, sort of, she does this really sort of weird accent, and then she's not doing the weird accent.
She's like a Russian accent, but yeah, would it be
reminding? She's the one character I dislike in this.
She's communicating with, not yet, but she's going to be communicating with the powers that be.
Her name is Morgana.
Confusingly, Morgana. Yeah, well done, Mary.
Dealing with customers.
Mary, it does rather make me think we should have a quiz this week, as you seem to
have.
Quite a lot of answers. No, thank you. Okay.
I think when the pressure's off, Mary delivers, doesn't she?
Alan T. Butcher says, Beryl Reed was Adrian Mole's grandmother. Marvin the paranoid android was his dad. So there you go.
Really?
I've read most of the Adrian Mole books. Love them. But let's go back to Doctor Who. Right, so they go in the circus and watch a bit of the acts that are going on, and there's it's quite sinister because there's a point in which the Doctor gets caught and shoved in a cage, and Ace legs it and sort of cuts part of the tent and hides by the pinching the tent back together again. And then we meet Deadbeat, who looks like he's on something.
Yeah. He's a bit out of it.
He's very out of it.
He's on the planet.
Is that supposed to be a joke?
Yes.
No, not really.
Lillian Robbins says, I missed the quiz. Well, it was on about 6 months ago. Same if you here. Want to go back and listen to one of those episodes.
I miss it too. Well, I have it again.
We're already running over the time.
Thank you. Well, the reason, actually, funny enough, that we don't have the quiz, Kirby, is that after we've managed to spend 10 hours longer than the actual story talking about it, there's never enough time to actually do the quiz. So there we go.
And we're getting a lot of feedback to read, too.
Yes.
When are we going to do that?
Anyway, Nord is sent into the ring, and he impresses the...
Isn't that a VPN company? NordVPN?
Anyway, and he impresses the judges, as we call them on Tess Bailey, we call them on Strictly Come Dancing, the judges who mark 9 for the first act when he does some lifting. But sadly for him, he's not so good at telling jokes.
They're very inconsistent with them awarding points.
Yeah.
But lifting a weight above the head, that's not very impressive at all.
No, but they were easily impressed on that particular occasion. Anyway, so, WizKid arrives at the circus, very excited. He's a big fan, etc., etc. And then Ace gets captured by Sinister.
Yes, he's obviously as enthusiastic about being there as one a Doctor Who fan would be enthusiastic about visiting that quarry.
Anyway, I do love the exterior shots of the planet that never moves behind the tent. There seems to be in some sort of like a synchronistic orbit. Is that how you say it, Debbie? You're quite intellectual, aren't you?
I think it's
stasis orbit. Oh, stasis orbit. Okay. Yeah.
Wait a second. They're not there that long. It's like go out and see the moon in the sky.
Kirsty's here. Hang on, this deserves. Hang on, this. Let's have a special. Here we go. Kirsty's here. All right, have you got a quote ready?
Ah, that would be telling, old boy. What about yours?
Is that the quote?
Yeah. I heard them utter it, and I'm like, that's the one.
Right.
We're only about 5 minutes into the story so far.
So you've been going about three hours.
Well, I'll tell you where we are. Right, just so you're not going to be underwhelmed by anything you may or may not have missed previously to this point. We're actually in episode 2 with 3 minutes to go, and it's the bit where the Doctor and Mags have conned their way out of captivity and having a poke around the, you know, these weird sort of
she said
catacombs. And I did notice a bit of attention to detail when Ace, who's now sort of been kidnapped by weird but wonderful clown, is sort of shoved in this room where there's lots of robots and dodgy looking clown things, her worst nightmare, no doubt. And on the actual glass window, I thought it was Rover's return glass, but it actually says Psychic Circus. So that little attention to detail I was actually quite impressed with.
Speaking of attention to detail, did she get the earring that she had in the last episode yet?
Yes.
Mm. Okay, so she's been given it now.
She has it's
a little timey-wimey.
That's what she said. Yeah. Robert Vench Jr. attention says, hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
The Doctor and Mags find this very, very deep pit, and the Doctor throws one of his juggling clubs down it, and it spins away.
Is there a large green creature with odd protuberances down there?
I don't know, Kirby. Anyway, but they're...
We're supposed to be watching Doctor Who.
And then we find... Captain Cook and his a group of clowns turn up after basically throwing the Doctor and Mags under the bus.
Did you say Captain Kirk?
No, it's what you said, Kirby.
You said Captain Kirk. Stop making out it wasn't you.
Right, so episode 3. They were doing very well here now.
Wow.
Might have to slow things up for episode four. No, give us time to talk about it. Right.
Don't tell him that.
Yeah.
Get a spreadsheet
it was a bit stupid,
open.
Wasn't it? Anyway, so this is the point we
meet. Already open.
What? This is the point in which Ace meets Bellboy and his ill-fitting costume. And, yeah, then we go back to the circus where the three judges, and, of course, your little girl keeps, I'm bored. And they're eating these crisps.
Can I ask something about those
three? Eat crisps in a sinister way. Pardon?
Those three, are they like... substitutes for the three gods of Ragnarok.
Yeah, they are. They are the three
gods. They are the
gods. Ragnarok.
Yeah, so I mean, representing them,
They are the gods.
They're
avatars.
Different form, yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's avatars. That's representing them, then.
Oh, stop. Right.
No, that's...
It's ding, come
on. No, it's not a ding. How could you do a reverse ding? I'll have to get a sound effect for a reverse ding.
The doctor mentions that they have to expend a lot of energy to be in two places, two realities at the same time.
Splendid. Right then.
It's not like they're a couple of white mice that can talk or something.
Anyway, I did notice the clip-on ponytail that Deadbeat had, which reminded me of Only Fools and Horses, but you'll have to know all the episodes.
Actually, it reminded me of...
That's funny.
Oh, Rory's ponytail in the one episode.
Yeah.
It's probably based on the same thing. So, Ace and Bellboy sort of make friends, and Deadbeat and the Doctor make friends, while Captain Cook tries to worm his way out of another situation, which should involve him going into the lethal circus ring. Of course, he snaps up the opportunity of coercing WizKid into it, who's thrilled to bits to get the opportunity because he's always dreamed of, you know, being on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Yeah, so he has to put up with, because there's initial meeting, isn't there, between him and Captain Kirk, Cook, in which Captain Cook snaps at him until he realises he could use him to get out of getting killed early. And of course, poor old WizKid doesn't last long in the ring because he's a bit boring.
I like WizKid.
He gets more interesting on Adrian Mole. He starts masturbating and stuff.
Oh, was he on Adrian Mole? Really?
Kirsten. He was Adrian Mole.
We've already
very
had this
naughty
discussion.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I get for meeting,
we've already got past
the meeting at the beginning.
Could you, look, Kirsty, can you really imagine us getting this far into the story and not having mentioned the Adrian Mole link?
It wasn't allowed to happen. We didn't get far. No.
Yeah, that's true.
And also the Harry Potter link, which you missed the bit in which Kirby said that this character was the influence for Harry Potter himself.
Which I strongly denied.
Yeah, I think we all disagree.
It was not.
The thing is
that when I was watching with Fred, the first thing Fred said was, it looks like Harry Potter.
I've just got a friend request off Kirsty Bissett. That's just very, very scenario. I don't normally get those sort of things going through the... just
during the show?
Live
that was awfully
there
awfully
you go.
Bad of me.
You're accepted.
Kirsty, you need to change your picture in Skype.
Kirsty, no, you don't. Right then, moving on. We're on Doctor Who. Right then, so we got Mags is trapped in with Captain Cook
voice.
Again, and really doesn't seem to like him very much. Yeah, moving on, and then moving on. Oh yeah, the Doctor hatches a plan to get them all out, and then the horrible Captain Cook manipulates poor Mags into changing into a were-person, sort of, a little bit, just by her skin goes green and she wears a different set of ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Mags.
And the icon contact lenses.
Yes.
Can I mention
something
about
that?
They
weren't fun either.
Did you mention what?
No, you know the cheetah people in Survival? They were originally supposed to be like as simple as the transformation with Mags. You know, just contact lenses and claws kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what Andrew wanted, but unfortunately J&T wanted what the horrible costumes
were. Very, very kind of thing. Mm.
Right, so episode 4 begins with poor Mags being set upon the Doctor, but what actually happens, it all backfires on Captain Kirk, because Mags actually goes and...
Captain Kirk?
Kills him. But obviously, it's not Mags' fault, it's the werewolf, not Mags, but it is Mags. Well, you know what I mean. She had
it's
no...
It's the moon's
fault. Where Mags?
It's his own fault, basically.
There, Mags.
Yeah. Where Mags? And then, meanwhile, Ace sort of finds some gubbins, a little bit of tech on the bus. The fixed conductor is sent
tight,
in.
Please, ding ding.
What?
Ding ding.
Yeah, the repaired conductor heads into the bus and out of the bus while obviously Deadbeat's still a bit out of it, but he gets obviously the bit he needs to complete his little amulet thing around his neck, and which then clears his mind a bit, like Planet
it's
Spiders.
Lucky the conductor steps on that little box to open it.
But no, Ace stepped on it.
That's very good, thank you, Kirsty. Right then, moving on. So he's all right, and he helps.
That again? Are you sure?
I'm positive.
The bus doesn't matter. Get destroyed yet?
Does it matter? No.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
What is matter?
It's a detail in Doctor Who that is disagreed upon.
Yes!
I do love the way he tries to interrupt the music. Yes?
I just watched it. The shoe is the conductor's shoe.
Oh, dear. Oh, well. Doesn't matter. Anyway, after her...
I'm going to have to go back to see whether I agree with you. Don't expect me to take your word for it, do you?
Yes.
Yeah. Robert Venturini says, Captain Cook must have his tea. Hang on, just got a cough. So it's not COVID, it's just a bit of dribble went down the wrong way.
Lovely,
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Right then, anyway.
I figure this is the perfect one for us going off on a tangent, because there's so many tea references in this.
Yes, I like tea. Anyway, so they eventually, the crew of the Psychic Circus start running out of, performers, because they keep killing them. So they get to a stage where they're sort of needing to do the performing themselves. And the Doctor, meanwhile, finds a way of getting through this. He asks the gods of Ragnarok to open a, like a portal, so he can travel to them and meet them face to face. And while going through this portal, he seems to go through some weird 80s disco with lots of streamers and stuff. But again, there's a reason, and I have to mention this reason now.
It's overly long.
No, it's because there was a strike on, and they had to film this in the car park, basically.
No.
You stand corrected.
Uh-oh.
You've got 30 seconds to correct me.
You made the same mistake, Master. You made the same mistake the last time. There's not a strike. They found asbestos.
More dramatic to say it was a strike because it was the 80s. It was a coal miner's strike. And
no, they had to take all the asbestos out of the television center. And they had already filmed all of the quarry stuff.
Yeah.
And they thought they were going to have to do a shot on this one. But someone came up with the idea of, hey, this is a circus. We're going to do a circus tent in...
Elstree,
yes. Yeah. Okay.
Robert Vance Jr. says, Cook kind of deserve it for pushing people ahead of him. Absolutely deserved it.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely
did. Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, the Doctor ends up in the ring of the... Well, it's actually the what they call it. It is a ring, really. It's almost like a Colosseum thing, isn't it?
Like
the gods of Ragnarok.
Thing,
where he's just sort of... He goads them and performs for them for a bit. Ace and her and Mags sort of leg it
Master.
Because they're being chased by the clowns in a nice car. Yes.
The inside the costumes of the gods of Ragnarok, the mother and father are in the two on the end, but the little girl is not in the middle.
Well, there you go.
I don't know who's in the middle.
Apparently, as far as I know, one of the gods of Ragnarok thingies was at the Blackpool Doctor Who exhibition. Anyway, so like I say, I do like Mags's tights. She's got a very the lower part of the costume is very. Anyway, so she running away from these clowns. The Doctor keeps goading the gods of Ragnarok. And and then he does this ridiculous magic trick of pushing the egg in and out of his mouth. Very, very cheesy. Not the egg wasn't cheesy. It's not one of those like fermented eggs.
Most of those magic tricks, of course, they're very easy tricks.
Are they?
The one that I dislike using all the time is the fire and the magic pan thing, which is normally used for a rabbit, I believe. No, it's a dove pan. It's called a dove pan.
But he used it for a snake.
But he's got a snake in there instead.
Okay. Yeah, they had to hire a professional magician to teach Syl these different tricks.
I could do with a dove pan. It's just
easy.
It's very easy.
Right, can we move on? Right, so they get cornered by these clowns. Hang on, Miss Slider stopped because he lost the will to live.
Found it very, very easy too.
Robert Venge Jr. says, "Lol, they were clowning around."
Ding.
No, those sort of things don't get dings on this show. They usually get one of these.
Come on, that was good.
Right, so again, they're getting shot out by. Oh yes, that's right. Ace has got this little controller that makes this robot. Sorry, it's not a robot, is it? It's a sort of gadget that shoots all of the robots.
It is a robot.
Oh, it is a robot. So it's robots killing the clowns and the other robots and whatever they are. And the Doctor's continuing to wind up the gods of Ragnarok. And
Ragnarok.
Including dangling from a ceiling by his feet and stuff, which is a bit weird.
Master?
Yeah, how did he get that up there?
Yeah, how did he get up there? But that was foretold by Morgana in the first episode, because she had the hanged man.
Oh.
Yes, that's true.
I didn't see that bit. Anyway, the Doctor has a shiny piece of metal. So when it comes to the point in which they're going to shoot him with their head beams, he reflects it back at them. And,
why do they keep shooting and keep shooting, you know, when they're all being reflected back like that?
I don't know.
They were trained by
Doctor
the
Who.
Troopers.
I don't know. Anyway, so eventually everything starts, obviously, with the help of Kingpin, who's the real boss of the circus. But something's happened. He got his mind taken over. They overcome the gods in Ragnarok. And there's that brilliant scene in which the Doctor walks away from the tent as it explodes.
Oh, I love
slightly
that.
Slightly too much. And, of course, we have another shot of Peggy Mount and her little cart walking away from this sort of pink whirlwind tornado thing, which is essentially the gods of Ragnarok disappearing from the site. So that means that Kingpin can reinitiate his circus and they all live happily ever after. Right then.
With the change of name, obviously.
Yeah. That was Deadbeat Kingpin. But anyway, anybody that's listening to this show probably should have watched the story. Otherwise, you really wouldn't know what we're talking about. And I know Kirby's on it, but you really wouldn't know what we're talking about. Right then, so The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. Now, I have a funny feeling, for me personally, it really depends what sort of mood I'm in, whether I can actually enjoy this story. And I will say, it's not a story I would ever choose to watch. But having to watch it, it wasn't as painful as I remembered that it may happen to be.
Your attitude has changed since the last time we discussed it.
Right. Now, the attitude is because it's... Right, I was thinking about it, and why should this fit into the world of Doctor Who? Now, and I thought to myself, does it fit into the category of a science fiction fantasy TV show? 100% it fits into that. So therefore, it's acceptable. It's a nice little showpiece for the Seventh Doctor as well. I didn't like some of his cheesy things that he did in it, but then he was being very Seventh Doctor, so he's in character and doing really well that way. I like the fact that him and Ace split up to deal with their various jobs. I really liked, and it's just as well it is, but I really like Mags and Jessica Martin's part in the story. Although obviously they could have done a bit better with the makeup, but it was the 1980s, and you know that Doctor Who wasn't given an awful lot of money.
Her makeup was actually one of the best things in this.
I think all the costumes were great. I thought the clown costumes were suitably sinister. It was a bit silly in some ways
I don't
particularly enjoy the story, but it's got some elements that you can really look forward to, things you can have a little chuckle about. And bearing in mind these characters get killed in it, you shouldn't really have that, because you know it's quite sad that these people are getting killed. But for some reason, you just go along with the ride and sort of enjoy it for some, almost like the gods of Ragnarok themselves enjoy it. But to be fair, it's not a story I really like, but there's elements of it that I appreciate. And I will say, I'm glad I probably will never have to watch it again. Right then. Kirsty, as you turned up late, what did you think of it?
I kind of agree with you. It's one of those things that I keep forgetting about it, but when you start watching it, you kind of get into it, and you get pulled into the mystery, and it's actually one of the few that I've found on this one that have... I was saying to Kirby beforehand that I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, because it's been a little while, but no, it's... There's still an awful lot to like, and seeing that what they had to put up with, I think it actually came out kind of good, the way the sets were and everything in the tent. I think it kind of added to the atmosphere of it, and it kind of made it. I mean, there's some really claustrophobic scenes when the clowns are walking through the kind of tent tunnel and that, and they've got it lit differently a couple of different times, but I don't know. There's something really atmospheric and dark about this story.
Yeah, and that's weird, because it's in a very bright, the outside of it. It's not lighting wise, it's not dark, but the theme is
everything's really menacing, and there's this veneer of this tired veneer of color, which I think is really pulled off well. Everything's a bit worn and drab for the circus, it's something I'd love to see them, like, somebody redo as a modern story.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a really kind of neat thing. Here we've got these gods that are projected into our universe and how they're done. And interesting sidebar here, about 8 or 9 years ago, we did a couple of haunted houses, me and a friend of mine. And the second year we did them, we got a little more freedom. And so we decided to do a tent inside, a circus tent, and basically I called it a psychic circus. And I had three people who would sit up on there in regular street clothes and watch people get scared.
A very evil laugh.
I did a Doctor Who thing and people didn't know.
I would have known. So,
you would have known surprise. If you were here, but yeah, it was just one of those things. It's just like, it was all influenced by the story, and it really does. That's the thing I love about it, is it's really kind of dark and menacing. And
watching it over Halloween was quite apt as well, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got, at the time, of course, when I originally watched this, you know, here's the ultimate geek at the time, Adrian Mole, on his bike is WizKid. Yes. And it's just like, you couldn't have got more geeky than that.
Nope.
And it is. It's just this eclectic group of characters that show up. And even the captain, as annoying as he is, it's this time I actually found him annoying in a good way.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I was annoyed with how well he was annoying me. I was this has been you the whole time. Now I hate it for a whole different reason. Because it's like, that's effective acting. This is one of the stories that's really kind of improved on this viewing. I mean, there's still some issues, and there's a lot of stuff that's fluffed over, and, you know, he was building this huge robot, and then they just buried half of it in the sand. What? Why was he building a robot with laser eyes and he's complaining about things getting misused? I'm like, you gave it laser eyes! What did you think they were going to do with laser eyes? It's like, I'm going to hit that button that I put there. That
doesn't explain very much.
It doesn't matter anyway. Well, thank you, Kirsty.
But, Yeah, but I just want to say the robots is like the conductor and all that, dead menacing and really cool and well realized and loved it. So yeah.
Okay. Beep. Well, thank you very much. Okay, Kirby, you're itching to go.
You can't see me, but I'm holding up this big sign that says 9 on it.
Really?
I absolutely love this story.
Did you love it last time?
Oh, I thought you meant no. I thought you meant no. You said 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't like it. Yeah. Sorry.
He doesn't like it in Germany.
Yes, I liked it last time too. I've always liked this one ever since I first saw it. It's creepy. The clowns are creepy. The chief clown is absolutely fantastic for being as creepy as he is. I identify with WizKid for some odd reason.
You're going to need to give us a minute.
Oh, steady on. We don't need to hospitalize anybody. Thank you very much.
I just wish the other whiz kid, Matthew, would join us, but oh well.
Pretty sure the airwaves are quite full at this stage.
And you know, the other whiz kid, Matthew, is often dressed as the Seventh Doctor. So
yes.
And he apparently dressed as the Seventh Doctor at work yesterday.
Really? I thought you said he's off in dresses with the Seventh Doctor. I'm like, no. I thought that was my job.
Come on, 13 minutes to go. Hurry up.
What, so it's spit it out?
It's one of my favorites. It's one I'll pull out and
oh, my God. Ooh,
that's a single head.
Watch.
Please, no. Not in public.
Very, very good.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
The only thing I don't like
about that in the first place.
The only thing I don't like about it is the cheesy magic tricks.
Oh yeah. Wow. Well, that ruined it for me, unfortunately. I think it was just to bring up a very dark story to a bit of light into a very dark story.
Needed.
Right then. Okay then. Mrs. Deborah Melrose.
Hello. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm still reeling from the identifying.
What did you expect?
That's going in the best of.
Oh, unfortunately, it's become a byword in our house that if someone's being too pedantic, it's. Oh, stop doing a curvy, honestly. You're rough for your money, honestly, on that one. I sort of binged this. Instead of doing what I did the first time and watching it one episode, and I didn't enjoy it as much as I did the first time round because I knew what was coming with the magic tricks, and I felt that kind of completely made the story stop, even though we had Ace and the others running around trying to sort things out and getting it, and they were obviously in deep peril, you know, the wind's blowing, everything, and then you cut back to him doing little magic tricks in the arena.
It went on too long, didn't it?
Yeah, it was just too much, and I just felt, again, because obviously the first time I watched it, I felt it really just killed the story, whereas you're going on with it, this is good story, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I forgot about this bit. But
if somebody was good with editing, if they were able to recut that where you just got shorter bits of him doing magic.
Yeah. Because I totally get why he's doing it, but we don't need to see every single trick. We could just say, well, and for my next trick, rather than let's see the next trick, you could just cut away and, you know, do what you need to do. Because
like he's going through the tunnel. It's like, it doesn't need to be that long. We get it. You're going through a wibbly-wobbly tunnel.
Exactly.
Well, they paid for a professional magician, so they probably felt like they needed to get their money's worth.
Exactly. It does feel like it just sort of goes, okay, we're just going to stop and give everyone a magic treat now. And it didn't work. It didn't work for Isla. Isla was just there like going, why have we stopped seeing all the scary clowns? And what are they? They're not on some Ragnarok, because obviously she's into Norse mythology. I'm there trying to explain to her that actually they're the same people as the people who were eating the crisps and the popcorn. They're the same people. It just doesn't seem, for some reason, she just lost it.
Okay.
Couldn't identify it anymore, and it was that scene that did it. But I felt the music was pretty good. The clowns is terrifying. I am terrified of them anyway, so, you know, I wouldn't say I've got that phobia, because I could still walk past one, you know, but, you know, just, yeah, they were absolutely joyfully terrifying. And Mags is the best in the whole thing, because her makeup's fantastic, and she just seems to be the one person in it just who's genuinely worried about what's happening. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, yeah, that person's dead, yeah, whatever. She's like, no, they're being sent out.
Yeah,
hang on, that's just part of the plot, you know. She seemed to be the only one that was really, other than Ace just being generally peed off about having to go to the circus, which I felt was her playing very childish. It's almost like she was still trying to
silly teenager.
Yeah, trying to work out where she fits in her character, it felt, in this one, whereas she seemed so sure of herself in the last couple of stories. In this one, it was like, we got the sulks on, like someone had suggested, why don't we just try the sulks? But, yeah, I'll watch it again, but only if I really have to, I suppose, because the clowns are freaky.
Thank you. Okay. Robert, what did you think?
I quite enjoy this story, actually. Yes. I do admit, with you guys, it's not one that I'd pick out to, you know, if I want to watch a story again, I'd pick that out. No, it's not like that. But one thing that I have noticed with it, which I really love about it, is that it rewards more viewing, if you know what I mean. If you, like, I think when I first watched it, I was thinking, yeah, what the hell's going on here? I don't understand. But the more you watch it, the more you sort of understand what's going on and how bits fit together. But, and I love the bus conductor. Exactly. like one of those. And I like things that you can watch again and gain more out of it the more you watch it. I love the bus conductor explosion. I thought that was excellent.
Hold very tight, please.
What's that?
It says hold very tight, please.
And, yeah, the use of the car park to film the tent scenes was excellent, and for the fact that they could hire from a tent company. And actually, I think one thing that when I've watched Happiness Patrol, you look at those studio floors, they're painted, then they don't look like, you know, streets or whatever they're supposed to represent. And the fact that they could have wooden pallets down or wooden boards down, you know, really added to the sense that it's a real place. And I must admit, when I first watched it, I thought they actually did have a big circus tent up. And, you know, just the use of the miniatures of the to represent the tent just looked really good. special effects were quite good, apart from some, you know, that dodgy tunnel effect, as has been mentioned. And I like the.
And why are you doing in a car park?
Huh?
I said, Marvin, what are you doing in a car park?
Parking cars. What else is one doing?
That's what else I can do.
Right. There's now 6 minutes left.
I really enjoyed it. But as I say, it's not one to pick out. But yeah, when I watch it, I really enjoy it. So there you go.
What about the feedback?
That'll be after. Will you be quiet? Right, okay. Right then.
Well, Mary's not here.
Well, she is here. That's why we're just about to play this. Right, Mary, you've got 5 minutes.
I think this was a mess. all these disconnected, disjointed things that we're supposed to try to make sense out of. I can't fault the costuming, which I thought was great, or the sets, which I think were wonderful. And I think the actors were giving it 100%. You know, I don't fault any of that. But I think the script is what made it the mess. So many questions I have. What's the fruit lady doing out in the middle of nowhere?
Selling fruit.
Are the Lords of Ragnarok, are they more entertained by these zappy deaths than they are by actual entertainment? I mean, they seem like they want entertainment, but everybody gets killed. And at what point, you know, is everybody going to be dead? They won't be drawing anybody else in there, you know, and then they're all dead. And then what good is that going to do the Ragnarok people? What about the bellboy who says he's the only one that builds and repairs the robots? But then who fixed the conductor? Because the bellboy wasn't anywhere around there when he got there.
It's mentioned in the story.
Yeah. I saw other feet and hands and all that taking it somewhere else. But no, I didn't think that Bellboy really believably, you know, had everything to do with those robots. I had a lot of questions, but I'll drop those in favor of the thing that I think was emblematic of how choppy, unconnected, and, you know, last minute decision like the script was, is that in Andrew Cartmell's book, he says that he got the idea during this that he wanted his doctor to become more mysterious. Now, you know, this was filmed before they did Happiness Patrol and Silver Nemesis and that. So he just got the idea during this that he wanted his doctor to be mysterious again. And that's why, while the doctor seems to be just kind of a hapless participator in everything, he seems dragged along like everybody else. All of a sudden in the fourth episode, he's talking like he arranged everything. So I'm sitting there going, what? What? You couldn't possibly. So because they wrote that in partway through in the script that, you know, they wanted him to be this mysterious organizer of everything. So for me, this one loses in terms of script and progression of any good ideas. Even though it's entertaining to watch, you know, I like the creepy circus, and we saw that same creepy happiness in Happiness Patrol. So there seems to be a theme going on here. Anyway, so yeah, I wouldn't watch it again.
Happiness, I like that.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, and that rather nicely segues into our special guest for the evening, Jessica Martin.
Hello, Adam. Hello, everybody.
I suppose I better introduce everybody. There's about 50 of them. There's actually more people on the show than is actually watching it or listening to it. We've got Robert Haynes somewhere in Australia.
Wow. G'day.
No, there he is. He's got his camera on. Oh, what have you got your camera on for, Robert?
Jessica's got hers on.
I've got mine on, but please don't take any pictures of this. I've got no makeup. I've been decluttering my gown.
Don't worry, I haven't got any makeup on either. We've got Deborah Melrose, who's just around the corner from me on the Isle of Wight.
Hello
there on the Isle of Wight as well, Adam.
Thank you.
It's windy and horrid down here.
We've got Kirsty Bissett somewhere, not quite where.
Port Charlotte, Florida.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. We've got Kirby Bartlett Sloan somewhere in the United States of Semmering.
Hi, I'm outside of Atlanta.
And we've got Mary Lang in the World of Wonder, also somewhere in America.
Also called Dayton, Ohio.
I'm in the Midwest, the state of Ohio.
Right, have I covered everybody?
I believe so.
Right, you'll be glad to hear, yes, Jessica, that you're and I'll quote one of our watchers who said, Mags seems a fan favourite.
Oh, that's lovely to know, even though I came in on the tail end of your conversation there. And yes, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy was a very mysterious episode. It was one of those episodes that some people felt they knew exactly what was going on. And then for other people, it just sort of bucked the expectations of the usual narratives of the Doctor. But one thing's for sure, it has never been, shall we say, one of the also-rans of the series. And I just feel very lucky that, you know, I mean, I was only in one storyline in the television series, but I was in that one, and it seems to have sort of remained a classic and a cult.
Has anybody ever said potential companion to you?
Yes, they have. Yes. Apparently, it did come up amongst Whovians back in the 80s. I was totally unaware of it. For myself, it was a job, you know, it was a wonderful acting role. And the four episodes were the beginning and the end of it. And I never saw the analogy between, the parallels between Mags and Captain Cook's character, you know, as being sort of shadowy reflections of the Doctor and the companion. But then many years on, obviously, you know, in recent years, I've moved into the world of comics, and I've drawn Mags in that world, and I've done three stories for Big Finish. And it was when I was about to do those stories for Big Finish that, you know, people, the writers were saying to me, we're going to make Mags a companion, you know, this is, people have been saying that this would be a really good thing. So, I've been very happy to go along with the consensus, which was that she'd make a nice companion for the Doctor.
Yes.
So, even if it's in the audio world is kind of a bigger, it's a bigger context than the television series now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the Mags was particularly loyal to Captain Cook, even though it probably wasn't warranted. So that loyalty would have sat quite well as a companion for the Doctor.
Yes, yes. She, she's a strong personality, but loyalty was just in her sort of animalistic nature. You know, yes. The Captain was her master and that was that, yeah.
Yeah, it's essentially like the Captain was saying, fetch! And back he'd come with a stick. Lillian Robin says, hi, Jessica.
Hello.
And these are current viewers on Facebook. And, but don't worry, they can't see you. They can only hear you. Alan T. Butcher said, it's a shame they won't let Kirby into Atlanta. They make him stay just out of sight of Atlanta. And Robert Vince Jr. says, enjoyed your performance. How long did the makeup take for Mags? We were sort of musing as to whether it was your own hair back combed.
It was the top part of the Mags, punky sort of goth look. So my hair was growing out of a short, spiky, very 80s haircut at that time. And my dark roots were coming through the blonde. And actually, this kind of looked really good as that kind of, mixed colour look. And they added the green into the top and they wove. The bit that was kind of growing out at the back was put into a long, dark hairpiece. So, yeah, she had a pretty sort of funky hairdo, but it was me, partly me anyway.
Very 80s, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Very 80s and a little bit late 70s because she looked a bit like Susie Sue from the Banshees.
Yes.
So we were already being kind of postmodern even then, and now we're looking at Mags and we're being postmodern.
Yeah, certainly all these 80s... like discos that are, well, obviously outside COVID, that are quite regular. You could just go in your costume and you fit in quite nicely, wouldn't you?
Oh, God, absolutely.
I'm sure I dressed up like Mags for a couple of parties, unintentionally, but yeah.
Mags. I had a lovely young girl who's called Jessica, who came to Gallifrey One when I was there a couple of years ago, and she knew I was going, and she got a whole Mags outfit done up and had her hair done and came and visited, and it was like the first cosplay Mags, which was rather lovely.
Oh. Now, Debbie, you said you particularly liked the makeup that Jessica had on as Mags, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely. No, I love a more dramatic makeup. And when I first watched this, when I was a kid, when I was little, I first watched this, and absolutely fell in love with the hair and the makeup. But my hair is just unintentionally frizzy anyway. But I think. Mags is definitely on the list to eventually cosplay for me. I've got quite a number of them from having watched.
And it's handy because it's all in your wardrobe, Debbie, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
You've got your leotards and tights and your little rags around.
That's
the
what
legs.
She wears day to day.
That's pretty so much.
And makeup wise, Debbie, do you go before or after transformation?
how I want to interact with anyone, I suppose.
Well, Neil James says, Jessica, says, hi, Jessica, did you watch the show as a child and who was your first doctor you can remember?
Oh, I can remember Patrick Troughton, actually. I was very, very young at the time, but I do remember him. And my doctor was John Pertwee, and he was amazing. And I was extremely fortunate because when I was about seven, at our local church, we had a fantastic man who I think was an actor in his real life. And he used to do the gospel readings. He had a voice like James Mason. And he managed to get hold of John Pertwee to come and open our church fete. It was just incredible. I was standing at the tombola and suddenly I could feel this sort of like shadowy figure behind me. And yeah, there was like 6 foot plus of John Pertwee in his cloak, dressed in the full Doctor Who regalia. And I was just, I mean, aside from Doctor Who, I was listening to John Pertwee on these wonderful records as we had in the olden days. So these LP recordings.
Which have come
back. Because he was a very popular, he was very good at doing character voices. So he was always, doing children's stories. And this is before Words or Gummidge even. And he just kind of totally transformed his voice. So for me, it was almost strange that he was Doctor Who as well as being the man I knew from telling the stories. But that's my John Pertwee story. And and I used to share the same voiceover agent as Sean Pertwee, who was uncannily like his dad. And I'm surprised he hasn't been on Doctor Who.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's in Big Finish, isn't he? I think he's
Jessica, I understand that you yourself do impressions, and that in the day that you could do a dead-on Bonnie Langford.
Yes, I could. I mean, I took over from Bonnie in My Girl, and she was about 23 and I was 25. And she always had this quite childlike voice. And she still has got a childlike voice. I'd like to think that I've got a childlike voice still. It belies my years. But I grew up watching, and Bonnie Langford was my... I was so jealous of her. She was everything I wanted to be. She was in show business from the age 6 on a TV program, and then to cap it all, was on a show with a young girl called Lena Zavaroni, who was the UK's answer to Judy Garland. The pair of them were just talent. They were just MGM talent in two
very, very precocious, weren't they?
Very precocious. Mm. But I've met Bonnie a few times in real life, and I absolutely love her. She's incredibly talented, but she's also very normal, down to earth, and highly intelligent and very well read. She just is. Yeah, she's a wonderful person, and I salute her, still kicking up her legs and, performing on stage when we're not in the COVID situation.
And so much energy.
Yeah.
Well, I
still perform too, but I have other things that I like to do that don't involve being in front of lots of people. So I'm part geek and part show off.
Good, that's what I like to say.
I did read this, that Bonnie Langford was originally written as the companion for this story, The Greatest Show, because it was written early enough that the companions hadn't changed yet. So you might have had a chance of doing it with her.
Oh yes. Yes, probably. That's right. Yes, because she transitioned. She was with Sylvester, wasn't she, in a couple of episodes.
But you're the one who did the big screen, didn't you? You had the big, it would have been Bonnie if she'd been there.
Yes, but so Sophie Aldred and I absolutely hit it off. We have our birthdays are 2 days apart. We both went to university and did drama as a degree, and then very quickly from when we graduated we sort of ended up in show business as performers. So we had a lot of common common denominators between us, and we just what you see on the screen is what happened in real life. We were just we were all wonderful friends, and now when I see Sophie and Sylvester sometimes at conventions, it's like time evaporates and we're back in the summer of 88, waiting to go and do our bit in the Greatest Show.
Lily Robin says, I probably could put together a Max cosplay from my existing wardrobe. And yes, that's true. Matthew Rose says, hi, Jess, sending you well wishes. What was your fondest memories of working with both Tom Baker and Sylvester, now more specifically in Big Finish?
Oh, hello. That Matt is my lovely friend who sometimes books me on conventions, and he's a massive Doctor Who fan as well.
Good.
So he knows his stuff. Well, he knows, of course. I'm going to give out a story he's probably very familiar with. But my very first Big Finish, which was the last of the Colophon, was a small part, and Tom Baker was the Doctor in that storyline. And it was almost as if he knew that there was a new recruit on the Big Finish campus. And he just gave me this fantastic, it was like the Tom Baker, everything you need to know, sort of, an audience with Tom Baker. He was just incredible. He was like full on. Lots of very, very fruity stories and very funny. I mean, the man is a wit. And I didn't know all about this the rags to riches story, which was, you know, that he sort of grew up barefoot in Liverpool and was in a seminary for a while and then thankfully escaped and became an actor. So he was either going to perform on the altar or perform on the stage. And thankfully for us, he's performed on the stage, which I think Sylvester actually has that in common with Tom Baker, because Sylvester was in a priest, you know, studied for the priesthood as well, I think. Yeah. So there must be something about the doctor, you know, that sort of calls for somebody in that, you know, who would occupy a position of authority in whatever hierarchy the universe put them in. Yeah. It's very, I find that quite interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you're multi-talented, Jessica, aren't you? Obviously, like Mary alluded to, you're an impressionist singer, started out on Bobby Davreau, which was a very, very well-known comedian. Then you sort of become a part of a team with Copycats, and you won doing voices for Spitting Image, which is back. Are you doing voices for Spitting Image again?
No, they won't be asking me. And to be honest, I don't want to do them because I think nowadays there's just too much at stake. It's like you can't just do a voice. You're going to be on trial as to what, you know, why you're doing a voice like that, what the puppet looks like. It's too much aggravation. So great.
Yeah, with the immediate feedback as well, you know, people in the past when you do voices and things and impressions, you'd have to wait for a letter. Now it's immediate tweet. Oh my goodness, and then vitriol, which is not necessary at all.
No. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
It is a poison chalice. This
pain. But you were the queen in Voyage of the Damned.
Yes, one was.
Yeah.
Decorum. And the least said, the soonest mended.
Oh, Adam, we're going to have a queen bumper. We're going to have a queen bumper.
Oh, well, no, yes. I want a Jessica bumper. That sounds a bit rude. Kirby's gone very quiet. I think this is an opportunity for Kirby to say something. Isn't it unusual that Kirby isn't saying anything, everybody?
Very odd.
Yes. What's going on? Is he still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I don't have much to. Everyone's asked the normal things. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you have
something abnormal to ask.
Yeah. Go on. Well,
if I can take a moment to blow Jessica's horn here, just this last year, 2019, there were three, as she referred to, there were three stories that came out from Big Finish that reprise her Mag's role. The Monsters of Gocroth, the Moons of Volpana, and the Alien Werewolf in London. And I want to say that for most of the output of last year, those were my three favorite productions that they did for the main range.
Jessica, oh, wonderful.
Wanted you to know.
For people too, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You did a great job recreating the Mags. And I wonder, it's been so many years since you were Mags in the TV series till doing this series. And I know you recorded in 2018, but still that's like almost 40 years.
Yes.
How hard was it to revisit that role?
Well, I mean, I just did it in the same way that I played Mags in the first instance, which was, although I had all that makeup on and I became a werewolf, essentially I was playing myself. So I didn't really put on a voice. I didn't try to sound younger. So I think people accepted, you know, people are gracious and they know that I am not 25 anymore. But with the, you know, the magic of audio, hopefully, you know, characters like Mags and Ace were kind of ageless. Yeah. But I would think there's probably a maturity to Mags, not only in my portrayal, which wasn't intentional. That's just kind of a matter of personal evolution, but also in the writing, because, of course, Mags, she wasn't that big a character in the original storyline. She hardly said anything. She was in lots of scenes, but it was very kind of quiet and emotive reactions to things that were going on, you know.
I think
the clown as well, you know, the chief clown didn't say too much. It was Captain Cook and the doctor had the most to say, but Mag's got these fantastic storylines written in these three stories. And you know, I mean, I've got to give all the writers, so Monsters of Gokroth was Matt Fitton, who is the script editor for Big Finish as well. Emma Reeves wrote Moons Over Valpana, and then Alan Barnes, who was the script editor for Big Finish, he wrote An Alien Werewolf in London. And all three of them were so different, but they have fantastic kind of their own world of characters. You know, there was almost like the universal horror film vibe going on with Monsters of Gokroth, and then it was a bit Game of Thrones with Moons Over Valpana, and Alien Werewolf was just kind of out there. That was just like a crazy, you know, acid fest.
I think it was Moons Over Valpana where we really got into the culture of Mags's origins and you know, the other werewolves and all that, which I really, really liked.
Yes. So, I mean, what it showed was, I mean, these writers, when they're creating the stories for Doctor Who, they essentially, I mean, they've got to include the Doctor and the Companion, but you can go as far out there as you want to go, and you can have these, you can have historic settings and you can have intergalactic settings. It just is a fantastic kind of, you know, just a little firework to set these creative minds off to create stuff that, you know, you can now get spin-offs from all three of those stories. And and in actual fact, so if I can just divert onto the other side of what I'm creating creatively, i.e. not in the performing world, but with the comic. So I'm about to collaborate with a writer called Chris McCauley, who is working on a series of Bram Stoker stories. I'm going to be doing the artwork, but he's a massive Doctor Who fan, so he wants to create, together with Stephen Wyatt, they're hoping to maybe have Mags meet, you know, another very famous horror figure. Watch this space. I'm saying nothing else.
Well, I'd like to see some of your artwork, to be fair. Jessica, where might we be able to sample some of it?
Right, well, obviously the comic shops, you won't be able to get to those now in national lockdown.
They're still open till Wednesday, though.
In Australia.
Well, the best place actually is to go to my website, which is jessicamartinofficial.com. And if you scroll down, obviously they've got the different places.
It's on your page.
Yeah, he stalked it already, Jessica.
Good.
Got a link there on there.
Find all the Artemis stuff. So I have five publications today. I've got my two comics, It Girl and Vivacity, my story, Elsie Harris Picture Palace. It says out of print, but actually I do have some rare copies. Ooh. So if anybody wants to get a copy for Christmas sent to them, wherever it might arrive, if they order one now. And life drawing is the one which would be of most interest to Doctor Who fans, because of course it includes, being my autobiography, it includes a chapter about the greatest show in the galaxy.
That's a nice segue, because now we're going to hear what Andrew Cartmell says about Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. You often hear me grouse about, to complain about some, about the design or the directing of the show or the costumes. Well, the costumes were fabulous. The design was amazing. The director was great. There was so many wonderful things. And Stephen Wyatt and I had conceived quite early on that it would be a sinister circus story. The germ, the essential seed of the show, came from John Nathan Turner, who wanted to do a story called The Greatest Show in the Galaxy, which is a really naff title. I think it's a naff title. Stephen Wyatt thinks it's a naff title. But John had been very lovely to us and very indulgent and allowed us to do all kinds of things. So it would have been cruel and foolish not to have allowed him to create the name of the show. And Stephen Wyatt wrote this very interesting script, which is sort of about the counterculture selling out, about hippies and flower children and what happens when ideals become corrupted. And on top of that, you had the chief clown. Is it Ian Riddington? Is that Riddington?
I know who you mean. I can't remember his actual name, but he was in EastEnders for years, wasn't he?
Because he's amazing, and he's fantastic in that. But the entire show, except maybe for the gods of Ragnarok, who look a bit dopey, is very good indeed. And there's that wonderful bit at the end with that explosion, which is a real explosion, and Sylvester's really there, and he doesn't even flinch. Another masterpiece against all the odds.
So there you go, Jessica. Wasn't bad, was it?
No, not bad at all. He didn't mention me at all. I was in it. I was Andrew Cartmell that he trots out at every single convention, but there you go.
Yeah, you were in his heart. He just forgot to sort of spew you out.
Did anything visit the moment? Did you visit the set very often while you were filming?
I suppose he did, because I got a picture with him. He must have been there.
Right then, I'd have to say, Kirsty, do you have anything to ask?
No, actually. Just been enjoying listening to everything. And I gave my only question to Kirby earlier, because Kirby was begging for material and then didn't say anything. So I blame Kirby.
Well, Kirby didn't say anything.
Asking,
exactly.
How many hours it took for the makeup. I think that was probably at least 2.5 hours. I mean, I know that I just woke up in the morning, had a cup of coffee, and suddenly I was sitting in the makeup chair. That was the easy part. The hard part was just before I was going to film the scenes, transforming into a werewolf and having to put, yellow contact lenses in my eyes and fangs.
You're welcome. Oh, sorry, fangs, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, Adam. Oh, dear.
So,
we
yeah,
can't
so...
complain, he's the boss.
No, they come out word. As a... Time is the boss, unfortunately. So, it's quite a long time ago, isn't it, if you think about it, a great show in the galaxy. Yet, being Doctor Who... Year. Pardon?
Seemed like the other year.
It was in the 1980s. For me, it's quite a long time ago.
But
you don't look any different, by the way, Jessica. Apart from you haven't got the bouffony sort of back-combed hair, which many of my friends had at the time.
I did.
Yes, we know that.
I'm just jealous.
Isn't it amazing that people are still talking about a piece of work you did so many years ago? Does that happen in any other sort of walks of life that you've done?
Well. Yeah, I suppose I could take it really badly. And sometimes when I'm at a low ebb, I do. It's like when my son says to me, "Mum, the coolest thing you ever did was Doctor Who." And I'm thinking, but I've had a whole career. I played roles in musicals. I've literally done nothing since then. You know, everybody has their, if they're lucky enough, they will have an iconic moment. And my iconic television moment wise, yes, people will remember Doctor Who. Certainly Doctor Who fans, they know me for that and they know very little else. But if you're into the 80s generally, yes, it'll be Doctor Who and Spitting Image. And then for musicals, people remember Me and My Girl, which came immediately after Doctor Who. So my golden time was in the 1980s. But, you know, as we're looking back and talking about the 80s now, it's like when I was a child, I used to think, oh, my God, it must have been so wonderful to be around in the 50s. Everything seemed to be happening then. And the 80s was a very, very it was a wonderful time for culture, pop culture, and everything was happening then. So, you know, I think it's lovely that I am remembered at all.
Well, for me, the 80s is the new 60s, because when it was the 80s, all people were going on about was 60s, and people were trying to recapture it with music and dramas and films and stuff. And now it's the 80s that people are trying to recapture with series like Stranger Things, and which all set in the 80s. And it's a very sort of popular time for people now. And it's, the trouble is, it's further back in time than the 60s was in the 80s. So
it's
really
true.
Sort of hanging around.
I love it, Mike. My time is finally being celebrated. It's just like, yay!
Yeah.
Sorry, my dog
and now
is
I get
just
to actually talk to you, so that's even cooler. Because, again, it's one of those things. It's like if somebody says, greatest show in the galaxy, no, I'm not blowing hot air. But your character is one of those images that's stuck in my head from that show. It's just, you know, it was great. You got this kind of team up. You got Ace off on her own, and then you kind of with the Doctor, and it was a really cool vibe.
Well, I suppose what it was is that Mag's character was, I mean, we didn't have an age for her, but she was like a teenager, and characters that are teenage, young, they seem very now at whatever time it is. They're the ones who stay with you. So, which is why I love when I've seen it, but you know, Stranger Things, and I'm looking at Winona Ryder playing mum, but I think, well, but you're a teenager. What are you doing being a mum?
But it's
more in Brave New World.
It's basically looking at your eyes during that story. They're always wide open and sort of innocent looking. So that really sort of enabled us to sort of engage with the character so well, I think.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Kirsty.
No. Well, you know, I mean, when I look at her, I call her because it is like looking at another person. Mm. And I feel a sense of pride and achievement and miraculousness that, you know, you're saying to me, who was your doctor? And little did I know, as a 7-year-old looking up at John Pertwee, that I'd be on that Gogglebox one day in a show that was about to. I mean, the awful thing was, of course, we just, you know, the series was axed after our stories were on, and then it was a bit kind of not the thing, you know, we were a bit kind of out of fashion. Then all of a sudden this renaissance happened, and it's hopefully not going to go away. You know, people just love it and wonder why they ever said don't have it around.
Yeah, of course, COVID is...
I think we need to start the rumor right here, right now, that we're going to revisit the gods of Ragnarok.
Go and pick up a very special helper.
Stephen Wyatt, as you know, he's still a prolific writer. He's still writing lots of Radio 4.
Didn't he do a one-woman show for you?
Sorry? He wrote a one-woman play for me, which we did this time last year in London, and it was all about a lady who would be a kind of cross between Margaret Lockwood and Patricia Rock. Now, those names probably mean nothing to anybody unless you're a big old British film fan, but even though that time of day might not necessarily resonate with people, it had shades of sort of Sunset Boulevard and this sad, faded woman living in her, you know, very kind of impoverished little flat in London, kind of still thinking that she's the big I am. And Stephen and I share this sort of love and fondness for these, the poignant stories of the stars who we love, who, you know, for whatever reason, just kind of fell out of fashion. But they were big, big stars, and you'll never have that kind of stardom again. So he wrote that for me, which was lovely. But he's also, you know, he's poised to write. I think that there'll be spin-off stories coming from, you know, way back in the day. And the Gods of Ragnarok is probably something that's already percolating.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Stephen.
You know, it's a very but it's I think even more than at the time. So the Gods of Ragnarok, you know, who are watching these performers, it was a comment on the voraciousness of audiences, and certainly audiences that are television audiences. And now it's even worse because you've got things that, you know, the TikTok generation, so people have got an appetite for something that lasts a few seconds. So I think that
Adam likes contributing to that.
Oh yeah, I'm a TikToker. I don't like Snapchat because it lasts a few seconds then disappears forever. I mean, what is that?
Yeah. But yes, it'd be very interesting to see the psychic circus land and how they keep an audience entertained, and the, you know, and the real life horrors that they would be demanded of them in the new kind of immersive theatre world that we're in. Let the writers write that.
Wasn't it Kirby that suggested this story would probably have been better made now than made in the 80s?
No, it wasn't me.
Who was it? It was probably Kirsty then. Oh, probably that doesn't matter. It was so. Somebody said that anyway.
I think it would, because it would really be suited to a little more in-depth storytelling, and I could really kind of see it, you know, at the added mystery and kind of focusing on the characters more. And heck, you could even do a mini series on this, you know, following the different characters to that point. It'd be really cool.
Absolutely. Have the prequel or whatever. I mean,
yeah,
Hellboy and Love Child, there wasn't enough of them in it, I don't think. They were lovely.
And that was the really cool thing about it, is there was so much in there that you just really didn't get to see. And it's like,
and some amazing acting performances as well, wasn't there, Kirsty? Amazing. There were some amazing acting performances in as well in the story.
I had a lot of good actors in this story, I reckon.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I love it. I was talking earlier about Captain Cook, and I guess when I was watching him when I was much younger, it was
not Kirk. No.
I said Cook. Said Cook.
There was brilliant.
I really hated him back then, and I just thought it was just like I just didn't like him. But it's like now I'm watching and I'm like, no, it was the character It's like it was just. And of course, now I've done theater and everything myself, so I just found it totally. You know, once you get to a certain age and you start looking back at stuff, you start seeing, what people were doing, and you realize what that it's the performance that you were kind of, getting into, where you didn't really know what you were watching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the fact that you hated him meant he was doing his job really well.
Yeah.
But when you're young, you don't get that. You're just like, I don't like that guy.
Yeah,
and it's like, and then you get older, you're like, you're watching it and you're like, no, I just dislike that character, and you're doing it just perfect, you know.
I just remembered something. Do you remember that song that you did? The Psychic Circus song?
Yes. How do you know about the Psychic Circus?
It's on the DVD.
I never watch anything. Oh wow.
Circus
coming to town.
That's quite neat. I quite like it.
You can't ask us to sing it, Robert, for copyright reasons.
Oh well, vote for it to go into Eurovision next year.
I'll bring in, because hopefully either next week or the week after, Sophie Alder is coming on to talk about her book At Childhood's End, and I'm listening to the audio book of that, which is
good.
Very good.
Yeah,
and she does all the
anybody
voices.
Anybody good reading it?
She does all the voices, and it's quite interesting hearing her impressions of current Doctor Who actors, and specifically the Seventh Doctor.
That's
a great. So, have you sort of been asked to do any audiobooks? Because your voice would be perfect for doing audiobooks, especially the fact you can do lots of different voices anyway.
Well, I've done a whole series of Wurzel Gummidge books.
Oh, yes.
So I played Wurzel Gummidge characters, all the different scarecrows and the humans in it. What have I done? My latest, it's not an audio book, but audio play, it's Jeepers Creepers, which is a play written by Robert Ross, all about Marty Feldman and Marty Feldman's wife, Loretta, who I play in the piece. And it was fascinating because they were a real sort of power couple. She was very attractive. I mean, as we know, Marty Feldman was the weirdest looking man you could ever. But he was a bit of a ladies' man. I mean, they had their marital difficulties because he was just kind of, luring these women into bed with his sense of humour.
Wandering eyes.
Yes, but I got to play Loretta Feldman, who had a very sort of smoky, she sounded a bit like, what's her name? Frances de la Tour, in Rising Moon, Rigsby. So very sort of theatrical and kind of like that. So, but I've done, I've done quite a lot of audio plays and books over the years. So if anybody's an audience, hire me.
Yes.
They know, the name, I've been in Doctor Who, and I'm an impressionist.
Yes. Are you? Never guessed it. Rob Vance Jr. says, I was in my 20s when this story came out. I thought Mags was cool, so he must be like 25 now, Jessica.
Gosh.
So what's next for you then, apart from the lockdown for 4 weeks minimum?
I have got a contract to do my next graphic novel. Is going to be about an actor called Conrad Veidt. He was a German actor. People will remember him probably for playing Major Strasser in Casablanca. The Nazi in Casablanca. But he was very, very famous in German silent movies, and he was in a fantastic film called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And so The Man Who Laughs, and it was his face that inspired Bob Kane's image of the Joker in the original Batman comics. from this silent movie. And I was just sort of fascinated by him. And I'd read a few little Wikipedia things. But most interestingly, he was a German and his wife was a German Jew. And he actually signed his documentation as, you know, professed to be Jewish. And a lot of people thought he was a German Jew, but he wasn't. He was very much opposed to the Nazi regime and he was a very brave man. So there's lots to write about in terms of his acting career, because he made over 100 films and he studied with the Max Reinhardt Theatre School. The Max Reinhardt was an amazing German director who, like lots of Germans, he ended up in Hollywood as well. So it's about a character, but it's also about a time in history. So it's kind of between the First and the Second World Wars. And I'm writing it from the perspective of a young actor who is on the cusp of success and then lockdown happens. So he's kind of locked down with this fascination with Konrad Veidt. So I'm busy writing the script and I'll be drawing that over the next year.
Yeah, so you've got a bit of time, extra time to do work on it over the next 4 weeks, obviously.
Yeah. So and then I'm waiting. Yes. So
are you guys in complete lockdown right now?
We are, yes.
Not on
Thursday onwards, Mary.
Yeah.
On Thursday.
They have to vote for it because it's obviously urgent.
Yes. I know exactly. Why aren't we doing it now? But there you go. Not asked a question, is it?
No.
We're living in a crazy world, but, you know, we just have to. I've heard a very, very good proverb today, which is, no matter how bumpy it gets, it's like when you're on a ship, you just have to keep your eyes on the horizon. And that's the best we can do, really. So
that's all we can do, isn't it? Yeah. Just got to keep going.
Yes.
Back to Greatest Show in the Galaxy. How long did it actually take to shoot from start to finish in those days?
I'm trying to think. It was, what about, I mean, we were committed for about 4 weeks, I think, 4 or 5 weeks. Mm. And then we had our lockdown, didn't we? We had our strike at the BBC where it wasn't going to happen all of a sudden. And then
apparently there was an asbestos situation, Kirby tells me.
The asbestos.
Yes, the asbestos situation. But, you know, John Nathan Turner was the greatest showman and nothing was going to stop him from bringing that show in and doing it under budget. And he did it. He, you know, had the circus tent built in the car park. And you know what? The Greatest Show in the Galaxy is a fantastic title. It may have seemed naff at the time, but you think about it, you Google it, you're going to get, first of all, you get hit with that guy, what's his name, Hugh Jackman, and then you get The Greatest Show in the Galaxy forever and ever and ever. It's just up there. So it's a very memorable title.
Yes, I did actually. So it's a very ironic title as well, because it obviously isn't, but it's still really fab.
Yeah.
Somebody asked a question because I'm typing at the moment. Show related. Debbie, you're quite good at off the cuff questions, aren't you?
Well, I was just going to.
I wouldn't mind seeing some of your artwork, to tell you the truth.
Well, I haven't done any artwork recently, Robert, to be fair.
Not you, Adam.
I haven't had time.
I was just going to ask a bit more about your stage work more than anything. I mean, you obviously with lockdown and everything, obviously theatres just aren't unfortunately still not able to perform properly. I mean, was there anything lined up for you before lockdown hit for you to be back on stage?
Well, I mean, I was in a musical called Blitz at the Union Theatre and we were doing great business and there were like rumours going around that we might transfer to another theatre. And then lockdown came around. But actually something that I'm hoping now with lockdown, I think the dates are going to be changed. But I actually wrote my very first play in lockdown. And I'm exaggerating a little because I wrote the play, the first draft of the play. I wrote it 10 years ago. It's called Hallie's Comet. And it's all about a woman called Hallie Flanagan, who was President Roosevelt's choice of director for a project called the Federal Theatre. And I rewrote it because I thought, oh my God, the times we're in, it just couldn't be more zeitgeist. So Roosevelt, you know, when America was in the terrible, terrible depression, it wasn't a great depression, it was awful times. Everybody was out of work and men were, who had been, you know, sort of CEOs one day, and next they're hobos and riding on the boxcars, etc. So he came up with a scheme, and obviously I'm interested in it from the point of view of somebody in the theatre industry, and he wanted to get people in the theatre industry not only on some kind of relief. He didn't think relief was the answer. He wanted to get them back to work and give them back their dignity. So he appointed this amazing woman called Hallie Flanagan, who was she was a professor of drama at a very exclusive girls' school called VASA, which is still around today, I believe.
Yeah, VASA girls.
And she was incredible. So I read her memoir called Arena, and I read a biography written by her stepdaughter, and just this cast of characters who came together to make theatre. I mean, Orson Welles was one of her discoveries. Arthur Miller came out of this whole federal theatre initiative. And there were, you know, just there was all kinds of amazing innovative theatre that came about. But without doing too much of a plot spoiler, you know, the reason why people don't know about Hallie Flanagan nowadays is she was brought up before the House Un-American Activities Committee by Martin Dies, a congressman, you know, and accused of being a communist and accused of theatre was, she was asked if theatre was a weapon. So I just think these are very interesting discussions and very interesting issues to kind of look at in the light of what's going on with COVID, exactly. And the restrictions being placed on us as artists. So yes, I'm hoping to have a reading of that. It was going to be in a couple of weeks, but you know, maybe it'll be December. Even if it's early next year, it's still going to be relevant. So yeah, watch the space.
Exciting. Cool.
Well, for the last few months, when total lockdown was not in place, how was the theater? How was your show doing? Were you allowed to have full audience, or was there a limit to how many could come to watch a show?
Well, the show that I was in, Blitz, literally, we finished our run a week before the lockdown occurred, so we had no restrictions. But I've been performing, I've done a few cabarets in the last few months. Sadly, my cabarets aren't happening for this month because of lockdown, but I did a one-woman show outside in a sort of, you know, pop-up theatre outside a month ago for Waterloo East Theatre, which is where I did my play that Stephen wrote, You Thought I Was Dead, Didn't You, last year. That's the name of the play, and it's also, yes, could apply it to me, I don't know. I came up with that. I said, yeah, oh, You Thought I Was Dead, Didn't You? We're trying to find a different title for it now.
That sounds good.
But yes, I've done, and I did a cabaret with an actor called Ben Stock. We did a Barry Manilow show actually last weekend, and we played to a socially distanced audience, which worked. But you know, but it's not going to work now because we're just not allowed to have any entertainment at all until they open up the doors again.
So your hand just creep past the door there.
Yes.
Just 50 or 100 people.
Master of the house.
Yes, I know I am. I'm just going to...
Mary, I don't think anyone heard your question.
Oh, when you said socially distanced audience, what does that mean? Like 50, maybe 100 people or what?
No, not in this particular instance, because it's a small cabaret room, so it was about maybe 30-40 people in the room. It depends on the size of the venue. So you know, I mean, there we were supposed to be doing a show at the Yvonne Arno Theater in a couple of weeks, and that would have been a 300 seater reduced to 100 people in the auditorium.
Wow, it's hard to make a living in the theater.
The way they've been doing it, lots of theaters is taking out so many chairs, and it looks so sad. Yeah, a friend of mine shared a picture from where she works, the old Vic, and yeah, it was heartrending seeing just empty space, not at the right place, but to be on the stage.
It is heartbreaking. It's, you know.
Actually, I go into Tech Week for local production. And I'm running lights and sound for it. And so the performers on stage have face shields, and we have cut down on our seating, but we've got to keep the lights on. When you're community theater, it's you know, it's you play or we die. You know,
sorry.
That's the you know, when it's community theater, we put on plays or we die. You know.
Yeah.
You can't turn the lights on unless you're up there, and yeah, and but we have a crew that comes in and sanitizes the theater after each show and everything. So, and everybody's got to wear masks, and we're still getting people coming to see shows. So that's good. Yeah. You know.
Well, people want entertainment. I mean, for the cabaret I did a few weeks ago, it was, okay, I say it sold out. It wasn't a massive amount of people, but it sold out within days of it being announced. And people were prepared to sit there with their masks off for an hour. And they were so thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just a bit of freedom and release and the escapism of entertainment.
To be denied it for so long.
It's going to
be a big boom of entertainment when this is all over.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do believe so.
Stay in London. I'm just going to go and stay in London and go to every show I can, I think.
Yeah. I can honestly see that I think in the future there's probably going to be some kind of change in the way that theatre rights are handled and the ability to broadcast to people who, you know, if this thing sticks around, who can't, you know, get out to the theatre anymore. And so that people can pay a certain amount of admission to view live theatre and pick their night and still be able to sit in their home and have that experience of watching a live performance at that time. And so, but because I think, you know, with everything that's going on, they're looking at this kind of stuff to hopefully keep us going.
Indeed.
Well, yes.
Jessica, I'm going to bump you over some blurb because if you wouldn't mind, it'd be nice to get you to do a little bumper for the show.
I thought you were going to give her some feedback to read.
I really don't think she wants to listen to the feedback for the show.
That's a cunning move.
The Kinsey Report on the Doctor Who podcast.
How are you at cold reads, Jessica?
Oh, be quiet. I've sent you over via what's this thing called? Where are we? Skype. Just a little script for which I will edit out of this show and use in future ones as a promotion.
Editing, Adam.
Pardon?
You don't edit.
Editing.
I only edit on certain occasions when people might swear, etc., etc.
Yeah, he's looking at me, guys. Come on.
Can you?
So, sorry. What am I? Am I supposed to come off the chat now?
No. Just say it, and we'll keep it in this if you get it right first time, and then I'll edit it out.
Sorry.
Right,
how am I? What do I press to have a look at?
Hang on. I've got to work this out myself. There should be some dots somewhere that show the. Hang on. Let's pick this up here.
No, it's where it says chat next to the red.
Oh, yeah, down the bottom of the screen, there's a thing that says chat.
Open conversation.
Yeah, see if that works.
Yeah.
You should have a reality butcher's feedback.
No, be quiet, Kirby.
I'm on chat now, Adam, but I haven't got any script from you, so.
Well, that's no good. Okay. So, right. Shall I send it via the old-fashioned?
Why don't you send it via messenger?
That's
the old-fashioned way. I love that. I remember when it was the new.
Yeah.
Right, hang on. I'm going to copy and paste it. This is really high tech. And
I'm going to send a pigeon.
Fabulous.
Yeah, Mary's over there going. Yeah.
Fabulous podcasting.
Sorry, Mary. That was a low blow.
Podcasting at its best. Hasten to point out. Right then. Right, go over there. Now I've got to find you, and people are looking at this screen thinking, what the hell is his nostrils look like that for? And here we go. It's arriving with you as we speak.
But you accidentally said
it. I've got this. Ah. Right.
Everybody be quiet.
Oh, this is easy, isn't it?
It's what?
That's easy. You want me to read it now?
Yes, take one.
Hi, this is Jessica Martin, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
No, that wasn't quite right. No, it's fine. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you.
Adam, what about adding the which you can join?
No, you can't say that because that's the Facebook group has got that.
Okay.
I'm being pedantic now. Yeah. Well, we must move on, Jessica. You're welcome to hang around and listen to some of the feedback.
My husband has got back from. He's been out and about, so we're going to have some dinner now.
I thought that might be the case where his arms rather suspiciously came round the door in some sort of sort of almost like a Masonic way to say, right, that's the end of that.
I have returned.
Yeah, hello, I'm here.
Yeah. Anyway. It's been very lovely chatting with you all. It's been a really easy podcast. Thank you for all your questions and your, you know, and your feedback. And long may Doctor Who continue, and long may your love of Greater Show in the Galaxy continue.
Thank you so much. You've been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for coming on.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Right. I don't know how I'd have to hang up at your end there. I press this button and hang up the whole call. I'm going to turn my video off.
You have to leave of your
bandwidth
own
issues.
Down at the bottom of the screen, there should be a red phone sign that you can just hit.
Yeah, the big red button. It's not a Trump issue, it's just a big red. Oh, there we go. She's gone. Right then, okay. Right, so let's see if we can do some feedback then. You've been very quiet, unusually, for quite a while, Kirby.
Like I said, people asked all the questions I was going to ask. So you know what I was doing while you guys were talking?
Posting things?
No. I was downloading the entire run of The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, which I now have.
Well, it's very good, but could you do the feedback, please?
Yeah, can we do feedback instead?
It's all on YouTube.
Splendid, but could you do the feedback, please?
Chris Miller says, I love Mags. The serial is one of the reasons that I think the era of the Seventh Doctor is the best. Am I the only one who had the thought that Captain Cook seemed like a wayward Time Lord? No, you're not.
No, he's got that Doctor kind of role, hasn't he?
Yes.
With a companion, so... Yeah.
Then I say, hold tight, please. Last time we discussed the story, I mentioned that I was reminded by the conductor of the bus of the Flanders and Swan song, A Transport of the Light. And so I posted a link to that song. Robert Wentz Jr. says, Happy Halloween from Mags, with the wonderful picture of her in the green. Robert Wentz Jr. says, okay, hands up. Quit clowning around and give me all your balloons and confetti, with picture of the chief. Robert Wentz Jr., my review of The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. I started watching Doctor Who since 1975, and the show has really changed. This is the end of season 25, and I can say it's a mixed bag for me. In this story, the Doctor and Ace are invited to the psychic circus for some fun, but it's anything besides fun. People being killed, killer clowns, memory wipes. People have to perform for a group called the Gods of Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
Sometimes in the form of a father, mother, and daughter. We meet Captain Cook, the werewolf Mags, Flower Child, Bellboy, Deadbeat, who we find out is the kingpin who's owner of the circus. To make a long story short, which by the way is way too long, they find a medallion which will defeat the gods while the Doctor's performing magic tricks to entertain them, receives the medallion through a dimensional portal, killing the gods as the Doctor walks away from the tent as it blows up. The gods look like something from the Pyramid of Mars that the Tom Baker Doctor would encounter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got that sort of vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah. The plot seems very heavy laden to me at times. Ian Reddington did a great job as the over-the-top head clown. Enjoyed the music done by Mark Ayers, known for cleaning and finding missing soundtracks.
Yeah.
Studio shooting was done in the BBC parking lot due to the building being shut down. It almost went the way...
It was the Elm Street.
All right, let's get pedantic.
And you notice Jessica even went with the strike thing, which is not.
Yeah.
It almost went the way of Shada, but J&T wanted to get it finished. Sylvester was coached in the magic tricks he performed, and all very average story. My rating is 3 out of 5.
I think he's saying all in all, very average. So.
Oh.
You're getting coached by Robert.
Yeah, sorry, Kirby.
No, it's good. Carry on.
Well,
yes.
Robert winces. Sometimes his sentences sometimes.
Yeah.
Can't tell.
I know what you mean.
Yes. Quit blaming the material, Kirby. Yeah. when was the last time you did an Alan T. Butcher?
About a month ago, I think.
Oh no, it's been longer than that.
Yeah.
I've done them.
The ladies have been doing the kind of heavy lifting around here.
I've done
just
Alan
saying.
Butcher stuff.
You're just doing feedback.
Neil James, the greatest show in the galaxy. This is probably the story in all of 80s Doctor Who that I've seen the least. Not because I don't like it. There are far worse ones than this. But it just doesn't really excite me, and I find it easily forgettable. Maybe this should have been a three-parter. The opening rap is pretty rubbish, and the later raps just become annoying. Nord is very Mad Max, but the performance is too shouty and wears a bit thin. Other characters fail to make much impact apart from the Chief Clown, who is certainly the highlight of the story for me. Other good stuff includes the creepy family, the Doctor walking away from the explosion, and Mags' moonlight transformation. So, yeah, I like it, but it doesn't stay with me. 3 stars out of 5.
I noticed you've slowed your delivery down a little bit. It sounds really good.
Hey, yeah. Kirby.
Listen to you
yeah,
last week.
You're not getting so carried off.
Yes.
Well, I was coached by
Mary
last week.
Mary's a good coach.
Oh. I believe
it. Take it to school.
Your reading makes a lot more sense now.
That's never been said before. Wait a minute. Hang on.
Say what you really think.
This is what it deserves one of these.
It deserves an Alan T. Butcher piece, is what it deserves.
Yeah, we should test him on some real material next time.
Not this week.
Not this week, no.
Yeah.
No, not this week. Next week.
So I've already got it, so, you know.
That's what she said.
Yeah. Neil James.
Steve said, yeah.
Neil James follows up with the following 4 reviews will likely be much more positive because I love season 26 with a passion.
Ooh.
Yeah,
that's the thing. We only have 4 more stories.
Yes, you haven't finished yet, though, have you?
No. Robert Wins Jr. says, I agree, season 26 is better. The stint with McCoy walking past the tent went off a little too early because Sylvester said he could feel the heat from the explosion.
No, I think it was more than just a bit bigger of an explosion, that's why.
Indeed.
And the only other thing on here is Ian Kirk.
Yeah, we don't have to mention that. Right then,
I've never heard of Ian Kirk.
Be quiet. Mary, you have Terry and Linda Miles' blurb.
Okay, from Terry and Linda Miles. Good evening, all. This is the one I was not looking forward to. No problem with the story or the acting. It's clowns. I can't stand clowns. Linda enjoyed this one. I think it was Ian Reddington, the chief clown, that she liked, though. I bet this story put a lot of kids off clowns and the circus for the rest of their lives. When Ace was looking for her Nitro 9, she had the 4th Doctor's scarf on and also had Mel's top as well. Mm. Captain Cook, well, he reminded us of Uncle Albert from Only Fools and Horses, was very annoying, starting every sentence with, a similar thing happened when I was in... The Doctor and Ace have a brilliant chemistry together. Peggy Mount was wonderful as the miserable indigenous sweet corn mash seller. They don't make battle axes like her anymore.
No, they don't.
It was great that they killed Adrian Mole, aged 13 and 3/4, before his 14th birthday. Sorry, Americans, this was a TV show at the time of transmission. Linda hated it when Sylvester rolled his R's. He said the gods of Ragnarok. It sounded like the beginning of an elocution lesson. Sylvester was taught conjuring tricks by the great Soprendo for this one. Yeah, see, I told you.
That's how it's done.
Debbie.
Yeah.
Debbie. Oh, Debbie.
The polystyrene
hang
blocks.
On, whoa, whoa, hang on before you move on. Debbie. Oh, Is she still there? Debbie?
Yes, what? Oh, yeah.
Yes, it wasn't the great Soprendo the husband of Victoria Wood?
Yes, he was, yes.
Thank you. A little fact there. Mm-hmm. Carry on, Mary.
Ding!
Oh, go on.
Well done, Adam. Yeah.
The polystyrene blocks looked quite impressive in the dark of the circus tent and in the dark circus as well. The three clowns, mother, father, and kid, on the benches in both the circuses were a bit silly. They should have been a bit more animated. All in all, a good story, a good cast, and great sets. Filming the circus tent inside a tent was sheer brilliance. Terry and Linda Miles.
Yes, thank you very much, Terry and Linda Miles. Ooh. I will say that people might have been very unlikely, might have been hanging on to find out who the winner of the Fantasy Con or Fantasy Cos cosplay competition. The winner was Caitlin Hall, who had a cosplay of Mackie. Basically, she was in the dark with this glowing costume.
That she that was sensational. Yeah.
Yes,
that
was sensational. Awesome. So it was quite a phenomenal winner there. So well done, Caitlin. I should be emailing her if she's not listening anyway. Pardon?
What was she dressed as?
Mackie. It's a some sort of almost like an anime character.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, continuing on, we have this. Hang on, where's my button gone? Oh, Gil, that's the wrong one. Hang on, Google Mail's not loading up. We've got this bit of audio. Sorry, Kirsty, what were you saying?
No, I had filler if you needed it, but never mind.
Oh, okay. I don't really want to know about your cosmic.
No, in case you were faffing a lot.
Cosmetic routine. That's what I was trying to say, not cosmic routine. Yeah. Nothing's a bit of both there, really. Right, cosmic anyway. We've got this bit of blurb. Audio.
How you doing? Okay. Greatest show in the galaxy. This was one of the first McCoy stories I saw back in the day. And it was a far cry from that I was used to for Doctor Who. And in fact, I've gave some feedback on this one before. I think you reviewed this back in 2014, and I gave some feedback then. And I remember saying that, I think on one of the DVD extras, that Annika Wills was on there, and she said that by the time that the late 80s came along, Doctor Who had faced its darkest hour, and wasn't she right? You know, I struggle to keep keen about Doctor Who by this stage, but as a fan, you tend to sort of endure the bad times sometimes, don't you?
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, mixed feelings about this one. I thought the plot was a cracker. It was mixed with the creepiness of clowns and sinister clowns and so forth. I found some of the characters really annoying, WizKid and Nord. Yeah, they really got on my goat, actually, and I always felt that this particular story was something similar, or the value of it was something similar to some kind of second-rate ITV kids show. Honestly, a far cry from Doctor Who. I didn't like it, or rather the production value. But mixed feelings. But I think, all in all, although I wasn't particularly fussed about this story, it was probably one of the better ones of the McCoy era, in my opinion, okay, which really doesn't say a lot for the McCoy era, from my take. Have a great day. Take care.
Bye, Billy. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy.
Nice to hear from Billy.
I don't really think he had mixed feelings at all.
No.
I think it was pretty clear what his feelings were.
Master?
Yes, Kirby?
I just posted in the comments for this story a link to a YouTube video of the Great Soprendo from 1984.
Well, why am I not surprised about that?
I was waiting for that.
We also have this.
Hello, 20 Mugmap Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
I know it's not as good as it used to be, but I'm still terribly interested. Previously, I have left time for a laugh that never happened. Perhaps the listeners to the podcast will laugh if that happens again. A sort of meta laugh. In Silver Nemesis, De Flores was going to shoot the bird because he thought it might be an emissary. In Silver Nemesis, De Flores was going to shoot the bird because he thought it might be an enemy parrot trooper. The Greatest Show in the Galaxy by Stephen Wyatt. As is well known, the kid on the bike represents Doctor Who fans.
Yay.
The circus audience of three, demanding constant entertainment, and the general BBC viewers. I do not know what the Doctor destroying the circus represents. Probably a major temper tantrum. Jessica Martin, playing Mags, was in her first role after drama school. She went on to do voice impressions for Spitting Image and reprise Mags for Big Finish.
She did.
The episode was filmed in a real tent, as the studios were closed to remove asbestos.
Told ya!
The writer did not like hippies, which probably accounts for Kingpin being the only one to survive from the circus crew.
Yes.
A bit of a mixed bag. Too long at 4 episodes,
yeah.
And padded out with running down tented corridors and being captured and escaping. Southampton beat Villa.
They did.
In some kind of Blake 7 reference. Bye for now.
Master.
Well, I do like the fact he's left in his little mistakes there, because that reminds me of when I'm trying to record TikToks. But did you say something, Kirby?
Yes, I was about to say that Ian left a reply to his script. It says, I left the stumbles in this time.
Yeah.
Ironically, I complain about the story being padded.
Right, okay, I'm going to...
Pauses that you put in there, you know, were very nice.
I agree. Yes. Very good. Very good. Very raw. Right then, I'm going to do a TikTok while recording the show now. So brace yourselves. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm braced.
Yes. Good. Right then. I've lost it. Where was it? I wrote it down here. I'll have to edit it now. Yeah. Oh yeah. What do you get if you cross a chicken with a Dalek? I'll do that again. What do you get if you cross a chicken with a Dalek?
I don't know. What do you get when you cross a chicken with a Dalek?
Eggs terminated.
Oh.
I don't think
that was a bad yolk.
Oh, boy.
I thought Kirby would like that one, but it's a top quality pun. Anyway, right then, Debbie, you've got something from a very special contributor to the show.
Indeed.
A closely studied contributor, in fact.
It will be closely studied, I'm sure.
I hope it's closely studied.
This
deep breath.
While you're winding up, I've been sitting on a little piece of information I want to disseminate to
Disseminate.
Yes. Yes. Secret Diary of Adrian Mole.
Yes.
Adrian Mole's father is played by Stephen Moore.
Yes.
Yes. Someone mentioned that.
Marvin the Paranoid Android. Okay, yes. I wasn't sure. I missed the first part.
Yeah, he there for that
bit. Missed that entirely.
Don't worry, but it's well worth mentioning it again, because some people might have been asleep at that point, or might indeed be asleep at this point.
I heard someone say it. I thought it was Kirsty.
Anyway.
Yeah, I did too.
Debbie.
This drama is intense, or so. The title is meant ironically,
intense,
right?
Intense, and goodness.
Dear 20 Megabyters, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy is, of course, a closely studied metaphor for the treatment of Doctor Who by the BBC. The gods of Ragnarok are obviously the senior management of the corporation, who end up demanding the Doctor performs to their liking under pain of death whilst placing him within the constraints of an arena and being generally unhelpful and unencouraging. The stalls ladies are disgruntled public, disaffected from the show. Much of the rest of the cast represent disparate parts of the BBC, mainly but not all out of sympathy with the Doctor. Deadbeat Kingpin represents the creativity of the BBC depleted by commercial pressures in the 1980s under Helen A. His reassertion is a spark of hope that the BBC could be revived, however bad things seem. The Doctor and his companion have a major role to play in that revival, of course. It should be noted that while some suggest that this is an interesting and philosophical story with rich imagery and archetypal symbolism, in fact, it is a load of old tosh, and I don't mean it was script edited by the remarkable Donald Tosh from the late Hartnell period. Nice. We also learn that professional teenager Adrian Mole went on to adopt the nickname WizKid after becoming a huge fan of a dodgy galaxy strolling circus troupe and inheriting a spaceship from his friend Bert, who was the retired General Grugger he decided to pay it to visit. All in all, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy is generally awful.
No, it's not.
The preponderance of characters here are cartoonish and exceptionally badly written. The quality of the supporting cast is mixed, and some of the more established talent turn in the worst performances. Out of this wreckage, Jessica Martin emerges with considerable credit as seeming to be appearing in a completely different and more credible production. Also, Ian Reddington's chief clown seems to be just about the only element of the story that really works on its own terms. The TARDIS crew don't do entirely badly, and given the context, probably they couldn't have done much better. The tone and quality of this production was more akin to Rent-A-Ghost, but without the advantage of having the War Chief Edward Bradshaw in it or the Merker's equine cousin. A lot of memories just fell back into place. The plot elements are
Ran? Not... No, it's kind of a slow amble down the corridor, isn't it?
Very slow. The plot elements are not only presented in a rather infantile manner, but also seem to be completely incoherent, and because the narrative does not flow naturally, it drags considerably and is very disengaging. This story is certainly four episodes too long and could only have been improved by the industrial action that affected it, causing it to be abandoned, and then for it to be reconstructed later in various forms, like a part-narrated version by Sylvester McCoy, a rewritten audio version with Paul McGann, and an animated version. Next up, Doctor Who and the Collapsing Water Tank, or the Return of Sarah Kingdom. Those are my thoughts, Alan.
Well, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Debbie, for narrating that particular bit of the blurb.
Debbie.
There's another comment you can read out from Ian.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. He says I should have used the loitering with intent pun. Debbie?
Yes?
You could read it a little slower.
Tell you what, Kirby, it's just as well you're quite a long way away.
You're sounding very much like I used to.
Excuse me, I didn't stumble, did I?
No, she did quite well, actually. And,
no, she's very good.
And I noticed what you did there, Debbie.
Well, we've got some stuff coming through on the feed.
Sliding a little joke in there so that we'll all pause for a laugh so you can catch your breath and continue on.
Right, stuff coming through on the feed. Robert Vance Jr. said, thanks for coming on, Jessica.
I do admit.
Excuse me, you're talking over my... Right, that's it. Where's the... Hang on. Let's bring
do
that...
I get reversed?
Are you still here?
Right, this is what... Debbie gets one of these for talking over my next... I was doing a link.
Everybody else is talking over you today. Why do I get one?
For old time's sake.
For old time's sake. Oh, yeah. Good. I didn't want that.
Right then. So Robert Venturini says, thanks for coming on, Jessica. Billy Kirkbright says, I'm up. That's what she said. Lee Anthony Davis says, hello, Adam. Hello, Lee. And then he says, I will share this on my group.
Hello, us.
Hey, well, no, yeah, don't worry about you lot.
We count. When someone says Adam, it means all of us.
No, it doesn't. Okay. It means hello, Adam. So right then, so I'm not going to go through the rest of the stuff we normally go on the show because we're running over quite a long way, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jessica, for coming. What I did forget to say was, and I really meant to say this when she came on, that the dying embers of the full moon, in fact. What a time for Jessica to come on when there's still a little bit of full moon in the sky. Well, there isn't because there's clouds there.
And I pointed out to you that it was full moon yesterday.
That was true.
Yes, I know. That's why we were doing Fantasy Corner at Halloween. But sadly, that didn't happen.
But do you think Jessica might come to next year?
I'm sure she would. I'm sure she would, but we're not at that stage yet.
She's free.
I forgot to remove Fantasy Con from my calendar. And
yes, you were talked up.
So did you just end up going and realize when you got there? What?
I only posted it on our little chat.
Yeah, it was a secret worry of mine that somebody would turn up. Despite everything.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
It probably would have been Kirby.
I did get on one thread on another website, I think it was on the Isle of Wight community page website, where somebody said, oh, it's lovely. I'm really looking forward to seeing Louise Jameson there. Hope you have a great time on Saturday. I said, this event was cancelled months ago.
Oh, was it?
But there you go. Right then. So next week we were having a discussion about Battlefield. And
About King Arthur.
The very last series of the classic era of Doctor Who.
I might not be on because Tom's doing his first nights and we're not sure yet what times and things are happening, but I should be on if Isla's quiet.
Okay. Right, so until then, thanks for listening.
I wonder if we'll ever have Matthew on again.
Nearly got it. And until then, thank you for listening, watching, taking part, contributing feedback, 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, to the show, and obviously sending in questions for Jessica, because she had a great time. I got a message off her to say so. So anyway, see you next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye-bye.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.